Okay, you found it.
There we go.
Okay, now I can start. Screen sharing again. Okay, so I hope it all works. So we're going to talk about the cyclotrons. And of course, we have different topics to discuss there in the cyclotron. And so first of all, I want to shift you a little bit so that I can see my own screen. Okay. So that how has the cyclotron evolved in the last since its invention, in fact, since it has been invented, and then we'll talk about the isochronicity. Yeah, so that's the basic operation principle of the cyclotron. Then we go in more or less the second half of the lecture. In details on the ion source, how does the acceleration equipment look like, and what is important there. Then intensity issues, because cyclotrons are, let's say, the machines to make very high intensities. And then last but not least, how to get the beam out of the cyclotron extraction. And so now, how did it all start? So of course, it all started with the Wiedereus linear accelerator. So you see here the beam coming in through a series of tubes, and alternatingly they are connected to an RF changing voltage, and so that you have the acceleration in these gaps between the tubes. And then of course the idea became, if you want to go to to higher energies, then of course it would become very long. And the idea was, can't we make it around, so that we can reuse the RF and that we don't have to make it very long. And that was in fact the idea. Now, how to, if you want to make it around, to make the turn, to bend the particles in their orbit, you need a magnetic field, and that is then needed. And so then you have in such a circular situation, you have that, you have seen it also in other accelerators, of course, the centrifugal force that acts is made by the Lorentz force. And so the mv squared over r, as you know, the centrifugal force equals then the bqv, where b is the magnetic field, the q is the charge, and v is the velocity of the particle. And if you calculate this velocity of the particle, that's in fact the circumference of the circle divided by the time it takes to make one tour. And now that was then worked out. If you then calculate how is this time that it takes to make one turn, how does it look like? So there's 2 pi r divided by the speed. And if you then combine these two formulas, you get then 2 pi times the mass times r divided by bqr again. And that was very nice. Of course, these r's, they cancel. And that was in fact the invention of the cyclotron, because then Lorentz in the US, he said to his PhD student, and this is really kind of historical sentence, R cancels R, don't you see what it means? And so the time does not depend on the radius, and it does not depend on the energy. And that's in fact how the cyclotron works. Because if you have a magnet to make the magnetic field, and then here an RF electrode is a kind of cookie box split two halves, where one part is grounded, as you see, and one part is then connected to an RF, a voltage that is changing in time. And then what is very important, that only the particles that are at the right moment at the gap, they will be accelerated. And they will then get, of course, the energy gain, that's the charge times the voltage that it has at that moment. But that means that if the energy becomes larger, you get the orbit becomes larger, so the radius of the orbit becomes larger, and you get a kind of spiral shaped orbit. But what is very important to realize is that all particles are more or less at the same radial position. The azimuthal position is more or less the same. They all cross these gaps at the same moment. And after this invention, so in 1931, this idea came up. Then already in 3 years' time, they've built a cyclotron. And here you see a picture of the first rather big cyclotron. Now you see a big magnet here. And here is the very small inner part where the acceleration takes place. And so that was still quite low energies, of course. But in 3 years' time, to make a cyclotron out of nothing is, of course, nothing, quite spectacular. But already in 15 years later, there was a huge cyclotron has been built at UCL in the United States, and magnet of 4,300 tons, and it could it has a D's with a voltage of 2 megavolt, so 1 or 2 megavolt. So that's really million volt, quite high. So this was really a huge cyclotron. So it is still there. It's not working as a cyclotron anymore. It's now kind of a museum part. And the other extreme is to split up this magnet in different sectors. Like you have at PSI, we have a cyclotron that consists not of one single magnet, but out of 8 different sector magnets. And with in between these sector magnets, we don't have this cookie box shaped type of RF electrodes, but we have four cavities in between these magnets, and we will come back to that later in detail how it looks like. But you see this evolution from a single magnet to sector magnets, and that's really essential for the bigger cyclotrons and for the higher energies that became quite important. But there are also many small cyclotrons nowadays in the world, mostly for isotope production, and so they produce say protons typically of an energy between 10 and 30 MeV. And now you see here very small cyclotrons, and they are commercially available by companies that simply make them commercially. One of these that's in Oxford Industries, where it stands on its side. So it's also a cyclotron. Here you see also that there are two, this cookie box of two half cookie boxes has been split in four parts, and where only these two are the electrodes, and these two are then the grounds. But you can open it as a door, in fact. And so, of course, this vertical orientation has some advantages in saving space and so on. In the meantime, also, there came for proton therapy quite an interest to have cyclotrons. And so you see here the first commercial one of IBA, and that has also been taken over by Sumitomo in Japan. And that's there in the world now since the beginning since 1996. And that is what you call an isochronous cyclotron. We come back later why that is called an isochronous cyclotron. Varian also made one, but you see it's I plotted it on more or less the same scale, and it's smaller because it's also 90 tons. It makes the same energy, this one 230 and this 250 MeV, but you see it's already much smaller, and that is because superconducting coils were used to make a stronger magnetic field, and that has been taken over due to its success by other companies. So IBA then also made a smaller cyclotron with superconducting coils, and Mevion also made a small cyclotron with superconducting coils. This is a very small one, and this is a little bit larger one, but you see they all make about 230 MeV protons. And so there's a nice evolution in the last 20 years. Typically, so cyclotrons they cannot accelerate to higher energies, to higher than say 1 GeV, that 1,000 MeV, until that energy, all kind of devices are possible. And what is very important to realize is this isochronicity, this be on time, and that is extremely important. That's the moment where the moment that the particles cross this gap. That has to be, of course, at the right moment when the voltage is at the right phase. And so here you see the simple example again with the two D's. But what you see again is that if you fill out the numbers, so the mass of a proton and the charge of a proton and so on, you typically see at a field of, say, 2.4 Tesla, which is already quite strong. So that's the field we have in the proton therapy cyclotron of a variant, for instance. But there you see that this circle time, the time it takes to take one turn is 30 nanoseconds. And so that means that the RF voltage is really an RF voltage, radio frequency. You are in the 33 megahertz range to have the right voltage, the right frequency that matches to the time it takes to make one turn in 2.4 Tesla. And that is really a very important issue, because if the magnetic field would be a little bit too low, now if you look at the formula, so if B is too small, then the time it takes to make one turn is too long, and then the particles arrive too late at the gap. You get a phase slip delta phi that I called here. And so here you see that the red dots, you see as a function of time, you see the oscillating RF voltage in the gap. And let's say in this gap with these two halves, you see that at these moments are the right moments that the particles can cross. But suppose the magnetic field becomes a little bit too low, then you get a phase slip. So here it is still in time, this in the, let's say in the center of the cyclotron, but then the particles become too late, and that adds up, in fact, and at some moment the particles, so they are still accelerated, so they are simply behind the correct particle, so to say, but it becomes long later and later, and at some moment they cross the gap when there is no voltage anymore, and later even negative, so they will be decelerated, and the acceleration stops at that point, and those particles are simply lost, so they will hit the iron somewhere or so, or the copper, and so it is extremely important that they are in time, and if you then calculate how accurate that has to be, we can see that, for instance, the phase with respect to the RF, so this error, that can be measured of the extracted beam, so the beam that's coming out of the cyclotron, and you see that that phase, that can vary, so between 30 degrees and 95 degrees, so about 60 degrees, more or less, but you see that the field to do that changes only slightly from 10 to the minus 4 with respect to its good value to plus 10 to the minus 4. And so let's say from 99.99 amps to 100.00 amps in the current in the magnetic field in the magnetic coils. And so that means only in this range of the magnetic field or of the current, you get a beam out of the cyclotron. If you are too low, simply the beam will not reach the extractor, or if you are too high, then also the beam will not reach the extractor anymore. So that's really quite critical, and you see it's a very narrow resonance gap, in fact. So it's 10 to the minus 4 in that order of magnitude. Now, in this curve, that you can measure that at any cyclotron, and that's always one of the basic characteristics of a cyclotron to measure this curve. Where is it and what is exactly the shape? That's called the resonance curve. That's from Smith-Garron in 1963. Now, but if we then look at, if you go to higher energies, then we have a problem, because then the mass increases with this gamma factor, so that the mass of the particle will be the gamma factor times the rest mass of the particle, where the gamma factor is 1 over 1 minus beta squared. And then you have a little problem there. If you look at these gamma factors, so at low energies, so at say 10 MeV, then the gamma factor is very small, and then you have only a 1% mass loss. Now, if the number of turns is not so much, let's say much less than 100, let's say 50 or so, then this phase slip is still acceptable. But if you go to higher energy, so 250 MeV protons for instance, the proton therapy machines, then the mass increases with 27%. And if you are at the PSI energy, so that is one of the highest energies that you make with cyclotron, you're at 590 MeV, then you have a mass of about 1.6 times the rest mass. And that means that per turn, the particle loses 27% of the orbit time. So that's, and here, 63% of the orbit time. So you lose the particles immediately in the next turn. And so that's really a big issue. How to deal with that? Now, you, in fact, here you see then what's happening, that the particles simply don't reach the outer curve. So they become too slow or too late to cross the gap, and they are lost. But there are two remedies to deal with that. And the first remedy is an other type of cyclotron, where the RF is being adapted, and that's what you call a synchro cyclotron. And let's see how that works. So if we have a synchro cyclotron, then so we have this the probe that the circle time increases with radius, or let's say the orbit frequency decreases with radius. And so the higher the energy, the higher the radius, and the lower the frequency will be. And so what you could do is that you vary this frequency together synchronously with this increase of the mass, so the increase of the orbit frequency, and you simply have that in this way, so that the frequency then adapts very nicely to the mass. So then the frequency is not a constant value, it varies in time. And now, so you take a group of particles from in the center of the cyclotron, and you accelerate that to the end of the cyclotron, to the extraction, but you only accelerate this group. So you have the low frequency, high frequency in the center, but then you go to a larger radius, and then the frequency becomes lower. And so then you have to drop the frequency of your RF. And so what happens, in fact, in time is something like this. And so it should move, but it doesn't matter. And so what happens is that you accelerate this certain group of particles. That means that other particles that come in the center at the wrong moment are simply not accelerated. And particles that are at extraction radius are also not accelerated. It's only this group of particles that is being accelerated. And that is then accelerated, so the frequency is dropping to a certain value. Then you extract the beam, and you have a pulse coming out of the cyclotron. Then you start with the next one, and again, you drop the frequency, and then you get the pulse out of the cyclotron. And this pulse is just the number of particles that is accidentally in this pulse. Now, you can regulate that in the ion source a little bit, but it is a pulse machine. And so that means that you only get the beam out of the cyclotron in a pulsed way, not in an almost continuous way at this high frequency of, say, 33 megahertz or so. But now it is a frequency of about 1,000 hertz. And within that pulse, of course, you have the 33 megahertz again. That is within that pulse, but only during a very short moment. That takes, several tens of microseconds or so, this pulse length. So that is what you call the synchro cyclotron. And that is then used for to make higher energy, so up to 1,000 MeV. Typical, the fields are, between 1.5 and 2 Tesla. And so that means that you need very large magnets. And so the cyclotron that you just saw in the beginning, this very big one at UCL, that is also a synchro cyclotron. And at CERN, has been taken apart recently, also a big cyclotron that's also working as a synchro cyclotron. And here you see also a big device at the exit of the cyclotron, and that's part of the RF system, and that is a rotating capacitor that's connected to a rotating capacitor, and that is making this varying frequency in time. Now, there's also another type of cyclotron where you have the same problem. If you want to make a very small cyclotron, like the one of Mevion and IBA that I just showed you before, so with a very strong magnetic field. For the proton therapy, that's of course quite interesting to have a cyclotron of say 10 to 20 tons instead of 200 tons. That is commercially, of course, much more interesting. You can make a very small cyclotron by making a very strong magnetic field, so not 2 Tesla, but say 6 or 10 Tesla. And then you can make it quite small. But the trouble is just a technical problem. If you make a magnet, so the upper pole and the lower pole, and in between you have a strong magnetic field. If you make it very strong, you get problems of saturation of the iron, of course. So at 10 Tesla, the iron is almost becoming air, so to say. Then what you see is that the field is not homogeneous anymore. And what happens is that, in fact, at the edge of the field, so the more you go to the outside of the magnet, the magnetic field becomes a little bit less strong. So instead of 10 tesla, it will become, say, 9.5 tesla or so. And so that's really a big problem. And that, of course, has immediately consequences for this orbit time. In fact, it goes in the same direction as this mass increase. So with larger radius, the field becomes smaller. And that means that the time it takes to make one turn, that increases with radius. And so it is the same effect as the mass increase of the particles with the higher energies that we saw before, this relativistic effect. And so both of these machines can work with this remedy of what you call a synchro cyclotron. And you can make this very small one. You see here, this is a very small one. And you see very nicely here. And since it is pulsed, you see here this purple curve in the middle. That is the intensity of the extracted beam. So here it is zero. And then here you see the RF frequency that has this maximum value in the beginning. And the particles are in the beam, in the cyclotron. They are present there, but then you see that the frequency drops when the particles are reaching the outer curves, the outer orbits of the cyclotron, and then here at the lowest frequency the beam is extracted, and of course the frequency has to increase again to its normal value, so then we are in this region, and this is the moment that the beam comes out. So that's this very short microsecond pulse, and that happens then say every millisecond or so. This cyclotron has been made so small that it can even rotate around the patient. So you see here a huge device here, and then this circle in the middle here is the cyclotron. The beam comes out here at the side, and this is the table where the patient can be located during the irradiation. And this whole device can then rotate around the patient. And so that's really quite a small device compared to the other cyclotrons. Okay, then, so the first remedy against this increase of mass or decrease of the field, that was the synchrocyclotron. And the second remedy is that to correct the magnetic field, not to have a homogeneous magnetic field, but to have a magnetic field that increases at a larger radius of the cyclotron. And so the field is then proportional to the gamma factor times the central field in the center of the cyclotron. And that's what you call an isochronous cyclotron, because then the frequency is kept the same, and so therefore it's called an isochronous cyclotron, the same time over the whole situation. As we have such a kind of gap between the poles of the cyclotron, and you see here at the situation at PSI, for instance, in the central region, the gamma factor is 1.1, and there the field is 1.5 tesla, but if we go to the larger radius, then we have a field of 2 tesla, that the gamma factor is 1.6. And so that's what you see here also as a kind of field map in the sectors. Here is 1.5 tesla, and here we are at about 2 tesla at the extraction radius. And we have so 8 of these magnets in a circle in the big cyclotron. And so there's one other thing that's, of course, quite important to realize. That's what you call the vertical focusing. And so if a particle is not exactly oriented in the midplane, but it has some vertical deflection or a vertical deviation, then it's pushed back to the central plane due to the focusing effect of the magnetic field. And if the magnetic field is shaped like this, you have an automatic focusing. So there's a very stable situation with respect to the orbits. Of course, this does not work for the higher energies. And so then you have this situation. Then the particles will be deflected out of the plane and you will lose the beam. But we said, in this second remedy, we have to increase the magnetic field with radius. So then the field will have this shape. And then the particles would be lost. So we have to deal something with that. And so there's no vertical stability. The field index is negative. And so that means that the oscillation frequency in the vertical plane, that is an imaginary number. And so there's no vertical stable oscillation anymore. But what you can do here is especially if you make the cycloton out of these sectors, then you have a varying field along the circle. In general, if you cross a field edge, so let's suppose this is a magnet, here there's no magnet, and if you cross then this border of the magnetic field, that's in this way, if you cross that with a certain angle, then there is always a vertical focusing effect. And so what you see in cyclotrons is that you make the pole not as a one solid block, but out of hills and valleys. So at places where you have a small gap and places where you have a large gap. And here the field is weaker, and where the gap is small at the hill, the field is stronger. So every time when the particles cross these gaps, then you see that the particle crosses the gap at a certain angle, so not perpendicular, and therefore you have then the focusing at the edges of the hills and the valleys. And here you see an example of the Agor cyclotron in Groningen in the Netherlands, and that has three hills and very deep valleys, and it's also covered with coils, these hills. And that is done to increase the magnetic field with radius. And so by using these coils, the field is not homogeneous anymore. So the gap is kept constant. It's not elliptical as I showed before, but the gap is more or less constant. But the field is completely shaped by the current in these correction coils, as they're called, or concentric coils. And so here you see that example again. And here you see the variant cyclotron for the prototherapy, where we have four hills and four valleys. And so that's really the same situation. But what you also see is that these hills and valleys are not straight anymore, but they got a kind of a spiral shape. And that is to make this angle larger with energy, so with radius, so with energy. So at higher energy, when the particles have a higher energy, that occurs at a larger radius, then due to the spiral, then this gap is crossed at a larger angle. And then the focusing is kept in the vertical direction very nicely. And so that's the reason why you have these spiral-shaped hills and valleys. And the extreme azimuthally varying field, so if you go around the field with an other angle at the other azimuth, the field is varying. It's strong, it's weak, it's strong, it's weak. And the extreme of these extreme method to build something like that is what you call the separated sector cyclotron. And this is what we have then at PSI. So to summarize what you can do with higher energy cyclotrons, the problem is that the circle time increases or the magnetic field decreases with radius. And so what you can do is to have a synchro cyclotron. That's the first remedy. And the second remedy is to increase the magnetic field with radius. And that is, of course, very difficult to do that, this second trick, to do this with a very strong magnetic fields. That's just a little bit of a problem. But you can add the focusing, of course. You have to correct the vertical focusing by making these hills and valleys or these separate sectors. Okay, so that was, let's say, the more general part of the cyclotron. Are there any questions maybe coming up? This is all clear for you? Okay, then we go on to some, let's say, parts of the cyclotron, some regions. The first is the central region of the cyclotron, so in the middle of it. And there either you have an injection of the beam, that the beam is coming from another accelerator or an external source. And that in the central region, of course, that has to be injected then. Or there's an ion source in the cyclotron itself. Now, if it is coming from outside, then, for instance, the beam is then brought in the cyclotron over the axis of the yoke. So you have a hole in the yoke, and then just in the middle of the cyclotron, the particles are coming, now, for instance, from above or from below, that doesn't matter very much, but from an ion source that is out of the externally from the cyclotron. It goes in this way. And then if it comes in the median plane where the acceleration takes part, so between the two poles of the magnet, then they are deflected in the horizontal plane by an electrode. And so that needs to have a certain voltage, of course, depending on the energy of the particles and the mass and so on. That's not so relevant, but it just goes from vertical to horizontal motion. But of course, we have vertical oriented magnetic field in this way. And so that means that as soon as the particles are not going exactly vertical anymore, then they are also deflected in the horizontal plane. And due to that, the shape of this reflector is a kind of spiral or so. It's called a spiral reflector. You see very complicated shaped copper electrodes here, and the particles go in between here. So they go down, and they are also deflected in the horizontal direction, but they're also curved into the direction of where they are going to be accelerated. It's a very complex shape, but it's called a spiral reflector, and they are working quite nicely. And the nice thing is having an external source is, of course, that you can, if your cyclotron is able to accelerate different types of particles, of course, one at a time, but different types of particles, and so for instance, also heavy ions, then an external source is essential to you cannot do that with an internal source. An internal source, that is usually only for protons or sometimes also for helium ions. And so here we have the upper pole, and here is the lower pole, and this is a gap on the axis of this circular pole, and that's filled with what you call the ion source, and that consists of two parts, and that's just a copper tube that's closed here. It's all evacuated with vacuum, and then there are on both sides is a cathode that's put at a negative high voltage, and then this vacuum region is connected to a gas bottle where helium or hydrogen is coming out. And so that's only a few cc per minute or so. It's really very low hydrogen flush. But as soon as that hydrogen is in between this high voltage and the grounded copper tube in which it is mounted, you get a spark in between these two. It's just like in the fuse of a car, for instance, in the motor of a car. And so you get a continuous sparking here, and due to this sparking, the hydrogen becomes ionized, and in fact you get a whole mixture of hydrogen ions, so that can be H2 1+, or even bare protons, so that also the second electron from the hydrogen atom is taken away. And so you get a kind of mixture, and due to the magnetic field, both the ions and the electrons move only mostly in the vertical direction. Particles that move in the other direction are simply lost on the walls of this little tube in between the upper and the lower half of the ion source. This little tube is called a chimney, and that's just a copper tube. It's the size of a pencil or so, and then there's a hole here in the middle. And in the cyclotron, we have these electrodes that are connected to the acceleration voltage. Now, and if at some moment the D has a positive value, then a negative value, then the positive ions are pulled out of this chimney. And that is how an internal source is in fact working. Yeah? So you ionize it, and then particles that are positive, if they are at the right moment in the neighborhood of the gap, they are pulled out of this chimney, and then the acceleration starts. Now, then they go through these what you call RF cavities, and there are, in fact, several very important parameters in these RF cavities. And so the first one is, of course, the D, the amplitude, the D voltage. And so that's typically varying between, say, 30 and 80 kilovolts or so. So that's a on typical D-shaped electrodes. And that determines, in fact, the energy gain if the particles cross this gap. So the higher the voltage, the higher is the energy gain. And the higher the energy gain, the larger is the distance between the different turns of the spiral of the particles. Now, if we then look at, we have seen now a system with two Ds, but there are also, you can choose between 1, 2, 3, or 4 Ds, typically. And so that also has to do with just the cost of to make it. And we have seen cycles already with three Ds, with two Ds, and the prototherapy cyclotron from Varian that has four Ds. And that determines the energy gain per turn. So how many Ds of this voltage do you have? That depends, that gives you how much energy does a proton take in one turn, and that determines, in fact, the orbit separation. And the orbit separation is very important for what you later, we will see later, that's for the extraction efficiency. And you can imagine that the wider the orbits are apart, the easier it is to take the particles out of the cyclotron. Here you see a system with two Ds. So this is this IBA, a machine for prototherapy. So here you have the hills. It has also four hills. And there are two Ds between the two hills. And these are the ground potential copper plates. And this is the Varian cyclotron, where we see four of these Ds. They're connected to a kind of pillar where they are mounted on. And these are the four hills in between. And so the Ds are mounted very nicely in the valleys between these hills. Now for the RIG cyclotron, with the separated sectors, at PSI we have another system. We don't have a D, but we have cavities. So there are four cavities in between these magnets, and they can make an acceleration voltage of about 1 megavolt nowadays. This picture was taken just before the upgrade to 1 megavolt. And what is it, in fact? The cavity is just a rectangular box where there's a voltage between the front plate and the back plate. But of course, at the edges, so if we go back, so at the edges is here and here, there the voltage is always zero. But here in this region, the voltage between this part and this part are maximum. And so that's what you see in this curve. And also in the vertical direction, you have that situation. And they are quite big. Here you see here a person standing on, and here you see the slit where the protons go through. And these are, in fact, the resonating cavities that may, so you have a current flowing from this side to the back side and back again. And so there's a current from here, from here, so to here and back again. And so that's the oscillating current that makes this voltage at this slit. On the inside, it looks like this. So a person is standing really in this cavity here for a repair. And here you see the slits where the protons go through. And so that's at this level. Of course, the protons don't go there with this person in. And what you see very nicely is all copper mounted here. And so the current flows like this. This oscillating current, and also on the top half, you have exactly the mirror of that, the mirror image. Now, if we then look at the particles that are accelerated, so the ideal situation is, of course, that if you have here the maximum of the voltage in time, then this is the ideal situation. But of course, there are particles that are too late or too early. And what happens with these ones? Now, of course, they also get they are also accelerated, they will be accelerated less. So their orbit, next orbit, will be a little bit less than the ideal orbit of the white particle. Simply because they get a lower voltage when they cross this gap. And you see, in fact, this situation. And that means that the beam bunch that is being accelerated is then extending over many orbits. And so that means that, in fact, the orbits are overlapping each other. And that is, of course, very bad for extraction. And so the orbits are not well separated anymore. And as we will see later, it's also very bad for high intensities, because the different orbits the different turns start to see each other, and then they repel each other. And so if the intensity is very high, you get this space charge problem due to that. And so what you you can say, okay, then we need a very small phase width, and we only accept a very small phase width. But of course, there you are limited with respect to space charge. You cannot put too many particles at exactly the central ideal situation location. So what you can do is that you add to this sine curve here. That's the blue curve here. That is the top so part of the sine. And here's the maximum where we have been looking at right away. But if you add then a third harmonic with a small amplitude and at the right phase, then you add that to this voltage, then you get this brown curve. And that brown curve is also the acceleration voltage. It's a little bit lower than the maximum at the top, but it is almost flat. So that means that particles that are accelerated are all getting the same voltage, so the same energy increase if they cross this cavity. And that is in fact done in this way. And so that third harmonic is essential to make a high intensity, to keep the orbits nicely separated, and the particles are all at the same orbits, so to say. They all have nicely the same energy after many turns. Now, intensity, we mentioned that already. So a high intensity, that means a higher beam power. And a very simple rule of thumb is to if you multiply the beam current, so the beam intensity, if you give that in microamps, and you multiply that with the energy in MeV, then you get the beam power in watts. And so for instance, at the PSI cyclotron, this big ring cyclotron, you have 2 milliamps, 2,000 microamps. If you multiply that with 590 MeV, that is the energy of those protons, we get a beam power of 1.8 megawatt. Now, you can imagine that such a beam should not hit the vacuum pipe of the beam pipe, for instance. You immediately have a hole then. And so that's quite important to have a nicely confined beam. But you can also imagine that if you have such a very high beam density, that in these beam bunches, the particles push each other away. And therefore, it is very important to have this high voltage in the gaps, so that the orbit separation becomes as large as possible. What you see here is the number of turns in the cyclotron at PSI in time. And so the cyclotron has been built in the 1980s or so. And then they started with 450 turns, but by increasing the RF voltage, the number of turns could decrease. And now it is about 170, 180 or so. And what you see is that then the extracted beam intensity that can be taken out of the cyclotron, that has increased also linearly. And so that's a very nice rule of thumb, so to say, that the higher the acceleration voltage in the cavities, the higher the intensity is that you can take out of these cyclotrons. And 2 milliamps is now really quite high. And so we have tests of 3 milliamps have been made, but that's not yet routinely done. And so you reduce the space charge, and that means the effect between the different turns, but also within one bunch. So this is a bunch accelerated on, so here you see the turn. Let's say that is the path of this one bunch that goes around. And so, but due to space charge, the particles are pushed apart from each other. And so you see different particles that are coming out of this central region. And these particles are pushed forward, so they are faster than the bunch. These particles are slower, so they are pushed back with respect to the bunch. But these particles are more or less at the same speed as the correct speed, let's say the speed that belongs to this bunch. And what happens, in fact, is that these particles, so the particles that are too fast, they will go to a larger radius due to the magnetic field does not know that these particles are too fast. They simply see faster particles, so the orbit will be a larger radius. The particles that are too slow will go to a smaller radius. So these particles are bent outward and these particles are bent inward. And these particles are having the same speed as the one, but they're pushed to an outer radius. So they need more time to make this turn. And these ones will take less time to make the turn. And as a consequence, in fact, you get a kind of, yeah, what you call a spaghetti effect. And you see that we start with such a turn shape or a bunch shape. And after several turns, so 40 turns, you in fact get a quite a nice round turn. So it's just wrapped up like a spaghetti or vortex effect, or spaghetti effect is called. And that's in fact an automatic compensation of the space charge. And due to that, the bunch stays to each other. But you also see the necessity of the orbit separation, because of course this is a larger radial extension than this one. And so these should not overlap each other, otherwise you get problems again. Then you would get problems to get the beam out. And how could you get the beam out? Now, for instance, in the and then now we go to another cyclotron, as so the prototherapy cyclotron again at the 250 MeV, and that has an energy gain with these four cavities of about half an MeV per turn. Now, if you then see with the magnetic field of about the 2 Tesla, what you see that the orbits in the central region are quite far from each other. So the orbit separation is then about 13 millimeters. But if you go to a larger energy, so that means that a larger momentum that goes more or less with the square of the energy, then you see that the radius, the radial separation, that decreases, that goes with 1 over r. And that means that, so here you start with a very nice orbit separation of 13 millimeters, but at extraction radius, you are at less than 1 millimeter. And so more than a factor 10 lower than what you have. Now that's of course, it means that you have to take care of this RF issues and so on. That's very important, but also that due to the magnetic field properties, it should not be too large. And typically there are several factors that determine this orbit separation. So that's the energy, this radius, and also this gamma factor. But what will help to increase this orbit separation is again this voltage of the D that immediately helps, but it also helps to make a not too small cyclotron. So this is the radius of the cyclotron. That means that if the cyclotron is larger, then the orbit separation will also be larger for a certain energy. And of course, there's a limitation here because of this gamma factor, and that effect determines this limitation that I said of a cyclotron, that the particles cannot be much higher than 1 GeV, because then you cannot separate the orbits anymore. But how can we make the orbit separation larger if we have tried to use there the optimum values? And then we use a certain trick, and that is by, let's first look at the extraction. How does it look like? And so here are the orbits that still have to make one turn, and then we have here a septum, and that means a piece of metal that separates the last orbit from the orbit that is being extracted. And if that orbit is extracted, then you can pull it out with some high voltage. And so that's done this way. And so this extraction efficiency is quite important, because you realize you should not lose too many particles here. And if you lose these particles in the proton therapy machine, you simply get a lower intensity. And of course, you create a lot of activation here. But for the high intensity beam, that is 1 megawatt beam, you would immediately melt it. And because of that, the septum, so this metal plate, has to be split up in many tungsten stripes. And if they break because of that beam hits it, then it's pulled away with a spring. And so you don't have to repair it immediately in that sense. But what we can do, apply a certain trick by using a betatron oscillation in the cyclotron to make this orbit separation a bit larger. If you look at the betatron oscillation in the horizontal plane, so you know what these are, so the oscillation around the equilibrium orbit. But if you then look at the resonance 1, the frequency one, then effectively you get the shift of the beam. And here you see here out and here lower than the central at the lower radius than the central region. So effectively you have a kind of shift of the beam. And that means that you have here a larger turn separation if one turn is still here and then the next turn is in this oscillation. And that can be used as an orbit shift by and have a septum at that location. And that is done, for instance, in this cyclotron of the proton therapy. Here you have the septum here and the high voltage plate here. And then here you have the orbits that are still being accelerated. But then a field bump is made here, a little error in the field, so to say, that you can adjust. Here the field is a bit weaker and here the field is a bit stronger. So here you bend the particles out. Here you bend the particles in, and that gives this shift of the beam, and that gives then here a very nice orbit separation to get the beam out. But there's also another way to get the beam out, and that's done, for instance, in Vancouver. That is, you accelerate not bare protons, but you accelerate the negative ions, so H minus. And so that's one proton with two electrons. And if you accelerate an H minus, and you strip off the electrons, then you suddenly get a positive charge. So then the beam direction goes in the other way. So you accelerate the negative particles in this region, and then you cross a kind of what you call stripper, and then the electrons are taken out, and then the orbit direction changes to the outside. And that is then very nicely done with this in these machines. And then you can have a very high efficiency effect of the extraction. Almost all particles will come out. There is a limitation a little bit in this H minus, that is that the magnetic field should not be too strong, otherwise because of the different magnetic force on the electrons and the protons, the ion would simply be pulled apart due to the speed it has in the field. But that means the field is not too small. Or not too large, a bit weak, so to say. That means that you need a very big cyclotron. Now, that's in fact what you have then in the in Vancouver. You have quite a big cyclotron. And here you see such a strip of foil, so the beam hits this foil, so these particles are being extracted. These particles simply miss the foil, so they are making another turn, but you can have, in such a cyclotron, you can have separate of these strippers after each other. So here is one, and here is one. And so you accelerate one beam, but you get three beams out of the cyclotron at the same time. And that's of course also very elegant. And so it depends on how far you push such a stripper foil into the beam, and the more you get out. And here, so you have, and it also depends on, that's also very nice, at the radius where you put it. And so here they also have a beam that is 100 MeV. That's this one. And then the stripper foil is pushed into the cyclotron to a much lower orbit. It also has a little bit different shape, of course, so that all the particles can pass to the other side. Then you can regulate the energy by pushing this foil more or less into the magnetic field. It's a very elegant way to have multiple energies out of the same cyclotron without changing the magnetic field setting. So if we are almost at the end, so we can say, now what is the typical use of cyclotrons if we're now concluding? And so we have the medical applications, that's typically 230, 250. MeV cyclotrons, protons mostly. Then there are cyclotrons for isotope production, so 10 to 30 MeV. Then there are cyclotrons that can also accelerate heavy ions, so with this external source. They're typically used for physics research. So carbon ions and so on, or even uranium or other metals can even be taken out of a source and then be being accelerated. And then last but not least, we have the very high intensity beams, usually proton beams. And then at the PSI, we have 1 megawatt, and Triumph, they have also 100 kilowatt beam with these with these multiple extraction possibilities. As these are the two cycles at this moment with the highest intensities. So there's also one in Japan that's a little bit less than the PSI one. And so what does a cyclotron provide, let's say, from the beam dynamics point of view? It gives, for the isochronous cyclotron, it gives a continuous beam. For the synchronous cyclotron, we have seen it gives a pulse beam. And you can make almost any intensity, very high intensities or very low intensities. For a synchronous cyclotron, the intensity cannot be too high because you have only these simple pulses and they cannot be made with a too high intensity. They have a great reliability, so it's really only a few components, and I cannot say too easily that it is simple components, but it is there are simply not too many components. So the reliability in general of a cyclotron is very high. The maximum energy of the protons is about 1 GeV, and of course. Now you all know everything. So if you have any question, I would like to answer that. Thank you. Has all been quite intense. Is everything clear with also with this extraction, how to use these resonances, for instance?
Yeah, I think that's all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so no questions. Everything is clear.
What would be like the proton source in the center of the cyclotron actually?
So the proton source is in fact what I showed you. So that can be you just have to ignite a continuous spark, kind of fuse situation. And there you ionize hydrogen gas, and you don't need many more tricks. There is also no place in the center of the cyclotron to make a very advanced source. You can make an external proton source, and then it becomes a little bit like I don't know if you have seen it at other accelerators already. The ECR source sources like that. They need a certain magnetic field configurations to keep the electrons and the gas close to each other, and the gas is ionized by an RF radiation that's put into this volume. And if you then have the protons, you can then put them on the external axis of the cyclotron and put them bring them to the center of the cyclotron via this axial injection system. And so, but the internal sources are usually quite simple. It's usually something that is making a spark, and sometimes also a part of to heat, for instance, these electrodes that make the high voltage, and so that more electrons are emitted from that source to make a more intense spark or a more intense continuous sparking system. But those internal sources are quite simple.
Even for the H-minus source?
Yes.
So how does that differ from
The H-minus sources are in fact exactly the same. And so the in such a source, you simply you shoot a lot of electrons in this spark through hydrogen gas, and then you get a kind of mixture in this kind of plasma, where you have also negative ions, also positive ions. The positive ions also H2 1+, for instance, is also made. So you have kind of mixture of different ions that are created in this chimney, in this tube, and just the particles that are at the right moment there, they are extracted. And if the particle is too heavy or has the wrong charge, it will be deflected in the wrong direction. So it will simply not be accelerated. But what we have seen, for instance, in the cyclotron of the proton therapy, you can see the kind of coloring of a copper plate, which is also in the center region, where these wrongly charged ions are coming out, and so they hit just a piece of copper somewhere, and but they are also extracted out of the source, but simply not accelerated in the cyclotron anymore.
Thank you.
Okay, pleasure. No other questions. Yeah, so the slides are also available at the PDF, so then you can always ask things later. Okay, then I think I still also have to close this session and stop the recording and so on. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.